So honestly, I did want to become a dancer. So many of you know that I had a stint as an actor at one time in my life, and there was a show that required a dance routine between me and two others. And two of the other people, one went on to dance for the American Ballet Company, and the other went on to dance for the Joffrey Ballet Company. And within 30 seconds of our first rehearsal, the director turned my role into a comedic one. It was not intended to be a comedic one. So that was my message from God. I have blessed you with other gifts besides dancing. Lily Tomlin said, when we talk to God, we call it prayer. If we tell others that God talks to us, they think we're crazy. Does God talk to you? Do you ever feel, however you might receive it, do you ever feel like you've received some message from God, some communication from God? When a previous church in Australia, we were trying to decide whether we would leave Australia and whether I would accept a call that was extended to me in Chicago. We loved Australia. We loved everything about Australia, but our children were young at that stage, and the only way that they would get to know their grandparents was if we'd move back. But we were really torn, really, really torn, and I wasn't really clear whether this was a call that I felt in my heart. Well, one day, the musical Chicago was opening on Friday night that weekend in downtown Adelaide, and I had to go into the city for business. And as I was driving, you know how they have lampposts and they have banners to advertise things? And banner after banner, Chicago, 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 Chicago. It's like, all right, I'm going. I have no idea whether that was from God or not. I suspect not, but it helped me. I was reading in the paper, the Sydney, Australia newspaper this week, and they interviewed a firefighter from the United States. And this firefighter used his vacation and used his own money to travel to Australia to use his gifts as a firefighter to help wage fight the wildfires that were raging there. And the reporter asked him, you know, was interviewing him, and one of the things he said in this interview that really intrigued me, he said, when they asked him why, he said, I felt like God was telling me to do this. Do you ever feel like God is telling you to do something? He felt, it just seemed, in the depth of my being, that it was the right thing to do. That this was the right place to be. I was exactly where I'm supposed to be. In the book of Esther, in our Hebrew Bible, there's a sentence where they say to Esther, you are here for such a time as this. You know, in the mess that our world is in, perhaps our inclination is to retreat, to run away, to complain, to groan. What if our invitation is to step into it? To hear that message, you are here in 2020, where you are, for such a time as this. And how might we hear God calling to us? God calling to our life. God inviting us to show up with our particular gifts, our particular presence at this time in history. Friedrich Buechner said, the place that God calls you is where your heart's deep gladness meets the world's deep hunger. So this morning I want to explore that sense, because I happen to believe that you are called by God. I don't know how that all works. I really honestly believe the chances are it's not a Charlton Heston-like voice saying, Steve. But I still believe that God calls you. The real question, are we listening? Are we paying attention? Do we have our sandals off so that we're open to receive that call? So I want to look at this incredible, weird, wonderful story where God calls Moses out of a burning bush, and to use this story in a way that might invite us to hear a little more clearly and deeply God's call to us. But before I tell the story, before we read the story, I just want to give a little bit of a background. So the background of this story is the Hebrew people, the people of Israel, there was a famine in their land. So they had to flee. They had to flee for their lives. They had to flee as refugees to Egypt because that's the only place where they could get food. Sometimes we wonder if there's any connection at all with the Bible to current reality. These were folks who actually had to flee their homeland in order to survive. And so the Hebrew people became so populous that Pharaoh, the authoritarian leader, felt threatened. And he feared that the Hebrew people would all gather together, and boy, if they all gathered together as one and revolted, I'm in trouble, he thought. So he came up with a scheme that really reflected his heart, where he was going to drown every Hebrew baby in the Nile River. Well, Moses was supposed to be one of those babies. Now, his mother tried her best to hide Moses, which again, if you think of today, the lengths that a desperate mother will go to protect her child. So Moses, a mother, made a basket and placed her baby in order to save his life in the reeds in the shallow part of the river. I read a quote by Brené Brown where she said, if your focus regarding the children that are separated at the border, if your focus is on the parents saying they have brought their children across illegally, our difference is not a political one. It's a moral one. Where she said, I pray to God that you will not experience a time in your life where you have to flee because of persecution, where you have to flee because of hunger, where you have to flee with your family because of violence. But here's what I commit. If you do, I'll fight for you too. That's what's happening here. Moses had to give up. Moses' mother had to give up her son to save his life. While the Pharaoh's daughter happened to be bathing in the river and stumbles across this basket with a child in it, and the daughter, unlike her father, has compassion and takes the child as her own and adopts the child and names him Moses. Now, Moses has this unusual life where he is raised in the palace with all of the power and the privilege and the wealth that the palace brings. But somehow he also knows his ethnic heritage. And he feels this profound, there's a little doohickey. I'm supposed to clip to the back of my shirt. No, I'm fine. But I always do it wrong. Anyway, so Moses, he's kind of torn. He has the power and the privilege of the palace, but he identifies with the suffering of the Hebrew people. He knows one day, he'll have to decide. Well, one day happened where an Egyptian guard was mercilessly beating one of the Hebrew slaves, and Moses reacted, and he tried to intervene, and in the altercation, the Egyptian guard was killed. So Moses then had to flee for his life in order to survive and live. He had to go as far away as possible, and he found himself in a place called Midian in the desert. And he married a woman by the name of Zipporah, whose father happened to be Jethro. Jethro gave his son-in-law a job as a sheep herder. And that's where Moses found himself, in the midst of Midian in the desert, keeping the flock of Jethro's sheep. You with me? And that's where we come to the story. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to Moses in a flame of fire out of a bush. Moses looked. The bush was blazing, yet it wasn't consumed. Then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that Moses had turned aside to see, then God called to Moses out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Then God said, come no closer, remove the sandals from your feet, for the place you're standing on is holy ground. God continued, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I've heard their cries. I know their sufferings. And I've come to deliver them from the Egyptians and bring them to a land flowing with milk and honey. So come, Moses. I will send you to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Moses said to God, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. So I just want to take a second to just kind of zoom in on a couple places in this passage. And then zooming in on a couple of places in this passage to just see whether we might hear a little bit more clearly God's call to us. The first place is, where was Moses after he fled Egypt? A place called Midian. When you hear the word Midian, what first comes to your mind? This is that psychological test, Rorschach kind of test. So I say Midian, you say middle. That's actually what the word means. Interesting, if we again look at this story metaphorically, Moses had to flee from where he had been, from his past. He's not yet where he longs to be. And he's in this middle place. The middle place often is that place where we settle. That place where we're kind of busy just dealing with what's in front of us. The middle place is the place where we're so busy dealing with what's in front of us, we don't have any time or space to hear a call to something greater. Maybe a life greater than a life just focused on ourselves. And then it says that Moses in Midian, keeping the flock, he went beyond the wilderness, and there he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. In the ancient world, the mountain, Horeb, the mountain of God, that's where God speaks. So I find it fascinating. Here is Moses just going about his everyday business. He's doing nothing extraordinary, nothing fantastic. He's keeping the flock. He's doing his job. He's dealing with what needs to be dealt with on a day-by-day basis. That's where God calls him. Not in the synagogue, not in the church. In the midst of his everyday life. We just celebrated Christmas. The shepherds were what? They're keeping their flock at night. And where and when did the angel of the Lord appear to them? In the middle of the field, announcing, I bring you good news of great joy, for unto you a child is born. It seems that God tries to get our attention the most when we're not paying attention. That maybe that call that we long to hear, maybe that call might be there in the midst of our everyday lives if we pay attention. So it says, the scripture says, Moses was keeping the flock. I think that's an important word, keeping. It's a maintenance verb, right? It's a verb. Keeping. How do we use that word? We keep schedules. We keep appointments. We keep a budget. We keep our eyes on the kids. We keep our eyes on social media. We try to keep our head above water. We keep anxiety, hopefully, and fear and depression at bay. We keep on keeping on. That seems to be where we spend the most of our lives, the majority of our lives. Keeping. There's nothing wrong with that. There's something really powerful and beautiful and wonderful when we can manage to keep on keeping on. But then what's really fascinating is the verb changes. The scripture says Moses was keeping the flock, but then he led the flock beyond the wilderness. So he's not keeping anymore. I have no idea why. Maybe the sheep were hungry and they ran out of grass. Maybe the sheep were thirsty and he was in search of a stream. Or maybe he was like I am some days. I just feel this tug, this yearning for something more than just simply keeping on. Maybe he woke up one day and felt that yearning. And it says he led them beyond the wilderness, beyond that place we know, beyond that place that's comfortable, beyond that place that's safe, beyond that place that keeps us kind of enslaved in fear. Beyond. So I'm wondering, to some degree, whether this bush that was burning was always burning. It didn't all of a sudden just burn when Moses showed up. What if that bush was always burning, waiting for Moses to take the risk to go beyond what's safe and familiar and comfortable? And he encountered Horeb, where God speaks. Isn't it interesting that God speaks in the place beyond? I wonder, as a church this year, in what ways will we keep on keeping on? In what ways will we risk going beyond what's safe, what's familiar, what's comfortable? Because then it says Moses, when he went beyond, he encountered this bush which was on fire and didn't consume, and it says Moses turned aside. Well, the original Hebrew, another way of understanding that is Moses paid attention. He noticed. It got his attention. Mary Oliver, the poet, said, paying attention is the beginning of devotion. Because that's the thing about keeping on, keeping on. We can become so obsessed with what's in front of us, we don't notice. We don't see. We don't pay attention. I was downtown the other day, and I was keeping on, keeping on. I had 18 appointments. And I was going from one to the other, and I was kind of purposeful, head down, moving. And somebody I know, said, "Hey." And I looked up, and they said, "How are you?" And I said, "Okay," as I kept on keeping on. this person, appropriately and gently, grabbed my arm, looked me in the eyes, made me stop, and said, "No, really, how are you?" That particular day, I wasn't okay. I was just keeping on. He noticed. He heard the silent cries. So he said, "Let's grab a coffee," and created a space to hear. I think of, where do I pay attention? How do I pay attention? Do I see? Do I notice? Do I see all of those folks who are invisible? We prayed for the homeless a few moments ago. Those who are invisible, those we don't see. There are so many we don't see. The lonely, the struggling. Undergirding this whole story is this whole idea that the people of God are crying out because they're enslaved. Now, we may be enslaved in fear, enslaved in some kind of destructive behavior, enslaved in addiction. There's so many ways we can be enslaved. But maybe one of the ways that God hears the cries of God's people is by getting us to pay attention. Maybe one of the ways that God hears the cries of God's people is when we stop, turn aside, turn towards each other, and we hear the cries of God's people. Today, this very day, this last Sunday in January, is my 14th anniversary of the very first Sunday I stepped before you as your pastor. I love this church. I know. Okay. 5, 10, 15, maybe 14, but thank you. Thank you. No, honestly, thank you. I love this church. I love this community. I love you. I am so grateful to serve with you, to serve you this past year. So humbled to be so ferociously served by you. One of the reasons I love you, I love this church. One of the reasons I continue to hear God's call is because Midian is not our home. Maintenance is not the work that we do. Keeping on is not our calling. There is this calling in the midst of us, calling us to go beyond. Go beyond what is safe, what is familiar, what is known, and to trust that we're going to find Mount Horeb. And there's going to be a burning bush with our name on it. You know, at the end of, in the passage, it says, God says, "Come no closer, take off your shoes. The ground you're walking on is holy ground." In the ancient world, they took off their shoes when they came home. Moses asked a question I ask myself every single morning. Who am I? I know what says, for such a time as this. You are here for such a time. Who am I? And all God says is, take off your shoes. I'm with you. You're already at home in my love, and you have all you need. I'm just asking, show up with who you are, and that'll be enough.